Great morning, great morning, great morning, precious people. You know what time it is. It's time for your favorite talk show on your number one station, The Culture Call, with your boy, L. Spencer Smith, right here on Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK, The Truth. And this is the place where Tuscaloosa meets the world. And so for the next 2 hours, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., we're going to be talking a little bit about everything. That's right, from society to sports, education to economics, from religion to relationships. And as always, always, y'all, we are here to create a safe space to have empowering, provocative, and sometimes even controversial conversations. And guess what? You can call in or chat it up with us as we learn together right here on The Culture Call. Listen, you know what we do? Shout out number one. Welcome to all of our first time listeners. That's right. I don't know who told you about us, but go ahead and buy them breakfast, lunch, or dinner, because they have done you a favor, a big one. That's right. Letting you know what's going on here at The Culture Call. Hey, find a seat. We've got plenty of good room. There's room for you there here as well. So go ahead and find your seat. We're about to take off. Shout out number two to all of our faithful, consistent, committed listeners. Hey, we would not be what we are without you. You have pushed us to the top and you keep supporting us. Thank you for being the wind beneath our wings as we soar in these radio streets to the top. Absolutely. Absolutely. So glad to have you. When you see me, you're always telling me and encouraging me, doing a good job for our community, and you pat me on the back. Yeah, sometimes you're like, oh, I heard you and you said so and so. Hey, you make me feel really good. I appreciate you all the more. That's right. Find your seat. You know what to do. Hey, you've been here for a while. And then last but not least, shout out number three to the wise, to the inimitable Brother Jay. That's right. The man with the plan, the wise sage that's on our team, that leads us early in the morning and passes us this hot baton and says, son, run on to see what the end is going to be. And I do that. Hey, I tell you, and I'm telling you, I'm doing it because he mentors us in such a profound way. Shout out to Brother Jay. Listen, if you haven't done so already, I need you to get your Apple or your Android device, open it up to your App Store. That's right. It's APP Store on your Apple or your Android device. Well, you know what? I got an Apple, so I don't know what Android says, but it's an App Store nonetheless, right? And search out Praise 93.3 FM. There you're going to find an app. Do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Download that on your phone. That's right. And there you'll be able to find out all the amazing things that we're having going on at Praise 93.3. From Brother Jay early in the morning, The Culture Call, Minister Chris, Sister Sandra, Lady Darlene late at night, all of the current events, the sports, that's right, the weather, huh? All of those wonderful things on that app. And so, hey, no matter where you are, Detroit, Michigan, New York, Richmond, Virginia, or right here in the beautiful city of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Montgomery, Mobile, Huntsville, that's right, I want you to, Birmingham, can't leave them out, Gordo, Reform, Utah, Demopolis, hey, wherever you are, when you have that app, you can hear us. And so we're glad and grateful that you're downloading it and put those plugs in your ear so you can keep working. Because I know we're in the hours of 10 to 12 and a lot of you are already at work. I ain't mad at you. Hey, you gotta go to work, right? No problem, but we've made it portable for you. So definitely get that app. Do me a favor also, if you want me to announce your public service, announcements, your events, all those things that you're going on in your neck of the woods, do me a favor as I let Lottie Dottie and everybody know what's happening in your church and your organizations, your sororities, your fraternities. Maybe you're an artist getting ready to have a concert, or a preacher getting ready to run a revival, right? We want to let everybody know so that we can put some faces in the place, because nobody wants to have an event and no one show up, right? No, we want you to know how important what you're doing is to our community. Why? Because we do it better when we do it together. Listen, many of you have been asking, how can I hear your past broadcasts? All you have to do is go to Apple Podcasts. You can download it on your phone, or you can go to it online. Apple Podcasts, type in Culture Call. Leave the article, the out. Culture Call, yeah? And there you're going to find my face, and you can go back through all of our archives. We've done that especially for you so that you will not be late, last, or lost in what we're talking about here on the show. Okay, good. Always, you can follow me online as well on Facebook. That's the only one I'm on. So if you're on Instagram or Twitter or X or whatever, TikTok, I'm not on any of those. Those are fake pages. But or I am only on Facebook. Meta. That's right. You can type in The Culture Call. That's right. Now you have, you can add the article, The Culture Call there. And, all you gotta do is press that thumbs up button. And guess what? Now you are a part of our online family. And as always, here is the golden number, 205-752-4800. To those who have the opportunity to call in, that's 205-752-4800. And you can be a part of the show. If you can't call in, I totally understand. Guess what? You can go ahead to that app. Send me a question, comment on the app chat. It's right there. You can do that and they'll send it right to me and I'll read it on the air. We'll dialogue about your concerns or your questions. Hey, I just want to make sure that I hear from you. Do me a favor. Sit back and relax. Go ahead and get you some coffee. You know how we do it. Maxwell House or Starbucks, all the way there. That's right. And for all you Seven Brews folks, you can get in line too. Maybe coffee is not your thing. Get you some herbal tea. That's right. Chamomile if you're trying to calm down. And green tea. That's right. Green tea if you need a little caffeine kick to help you make it to the lunch hour. That's right. Maybe coffee or teas are not your things. Hey, get you some water, spring or alkaline water, purified, whatever it is. Some of y'all on your diet journey, distilled, right? Hey, go ahead, wake those cells up, detox that body, and come on, let's get into the culture. So much, y'all. So much has been going on in the world. And many people are saying, L. Bishop, why are you not talking about XYZ ABC? Because number one, that's not my assignment right now. I promise you, I will come back to it. I'm not remiss on a lot of the things that's going on with assassinations, killings, and all those different kinds of things. I am, and I definitely have a strong perspective, but I don't want to vector off into things that so much so that I lose my focus on this month. And we're swiftly coming to this third week in the month of September. So we're coming toward that. And I want to stay on target as we talk about attacking poverty in our community, because I think it is important. But I will say this, that keep your eyes open, keep your head on a swivel, make sure that you research, do your study, make sure that you are in a prayerful mode. There's so much going on in our country that we need to be very aware of. And one of the things that I don't like to do is be reactionary to things. You know, I always like to stay informed of what's going on. So I want to encourage you, Culture Call, to make sure that you don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. Do your own research. Do your own study, right? There's amazing things that are going on in our community. And I would refute anyone that says otherwise. We are learning how to take care of ourselves in the midst of a chaotic conundrum that's happening, in the midst of all this rhetorical things that are rhetorical attacks are coming toward our community. Unnecessarily, you know, yeah, that part. I do want to send my heart out to all who are grieving in this country, because I'm telling you, as I continue to walk through a series of grief, grief doesn't pick any favorites. Grief happens, you know, whether you like the person or knew the person or not, there is somebody when they're lost that's grieving that individual, right? Now, and that's all I'm not going to touch anything else about that. I'm going to leave that alone for another time. Now, I want you to put a red pen and circle for another time, because you can best believe that L is going to come back and talk about it another time. I promise you. But I want to continue on this whole objective of talking about this understanding of poverty within our community. And one of the things that as I walk as number one, as a black man, as a husband, as a father, as a pastor, as a scholar, as a theologian, as an author, all these musician, whatever you want to say that I am, I have seen in my own personal life and in the life of others, the effects of certain things that are habitual, generational, that when we apply particular principles and we begin to move like there are realities, even as we begin to deal with them and set up new patterns and cycles, we have to acknowledge that certain things exist, right? Because whatever you don't face, you cannot fix, right? So repair has to deal with you not being afraid to look at the reflection in the mirror. And sometimes it always begins with us, and poverty is no different, right? In order for me to break certain chains and make sure that they don't pass down to my children, and to my children's children one day, I had to in my own personal life say, what are the cycles? What are the patterns in your life that continually, cause you to fit or continue to fall into certain patterns, right? That are negative, right? And I think that poverty is one of that. Poverty mentality, poverty actions, poverty reactions, right? And all of those things that are tentacled next to that, though, are connected and attached to the poverty mentality, right? And I think it's very important that we do talk about substance. We do talk about money. We do talk about, you know, all those things that are tangible, right? Those things that we can actually hold in our hand, Culture Call. I think we do need to talk about that and have a conversation. And I think we need to also feel the uncomfortability of naming some things, especially if they are apparent in our lives. You're naming them. It's supposed to feel a certain way because you're looking at it. You're saying, yeah, that does exist in my life. That did happen to me. I am doing that, right? Those things are imperative if we're ever going to fix anything. When I'm preaching, I have to touch on certain things and issues in people's lives, right? I cannot condone or make them feel comfortable in a life or a lifestyle that I know is not beneficial to them. And that does not line up with Christocentric thinking, right? And I'm not talking about this religious thing that they got going on right now, right? Because a lot of that is cultural. That's a lot of that is ideological. That a lot of that is structural, based upon someone else's perception. But I'm talking about those things that I know are deleterious, that are disastrous, that have the propensity to create generational strongholds, habits, cycles, patterns that will limit the individual. My job is to empower the imago Dei, the image of God in everyone, in every person, and how they show up, right? Deliverance is not mine. Deliverance belongs to God by the work of the Holy Spirit. But my job is to speak truth to every power, right? My job is, I recognize that. And that first, I've got to speak truth to myself. I've got to tell myself the truth so that when I speak truth to you, I am authentic. I am honest. I am a truth bearer, not just truth going out, but truth also within, because that will turn, if I just speak truth to you and lie to myself, I have turned truth into a weapon instead of a tool of liberation and freedom, right? And so that's very important that even as I talk to you and share with you every day on the Culture Call, it's important for me to make sure that you understand that you're listening to somebody that does the work on themselves, right? That I can't talk to you about poverty and I not work on poverty myself. I can't talk to you about your credit score and I'm not working on my credit score. I can't talk to you about your marriage and my marriage is a shambles, right? I cannot talk to you about you taking care of your children and my children are vagabonds and I'm an infidel to my family. So I cannot do those things, right? And so I'm very transparent about even in my own process of coming to know certain things so that you can trust and believe that what you hear from me, I'm also, you know, the preacher, an honest preacher, an honest teacher will always say that when they are preaching, the word goes both ways. It's a two-edged sword, right? So while I'm cutting you, when I swing back, I'm also cutting myself because we are all held to the same measure and to the same degree of learning and becoming better, right? And so even as we talk about this conversation about poverty, it's important for us to make some distinctives because, one of the things that I am really big on is making sure you have the proper information so that you can make proper decisions, right? Everybody in my church will tell you that I will always say bad definitions lead to wrong destinations. If you define a thing incorrectly, and you go on the journey of that definition that you, that word or whatever idea you defined incorrectly has a particular destination. Every definition has a trajectory. Every definition has a particular tangent that it's trying to lead you to. And so it's important, Culture Call, that we define things properly on its face, that we let people know, we let you know what it mean, what it means when we use certain language and when we use certain words, if we are together. Because I believe that poverty is a communal word and prosperity is a communal word. What do you mean? That if one of us are poor, then all of us are poor. And if one of us is prosperous, that means all of us are prosperous, right? And so, you know, you very, very rarely find in a neighborhood a very poor house and a very rich house standing together. And I'm talking about resources, right? And so you normally see things happen in a community orientation. If it's a rich neighborhood, it's a rich neighborhood, right? If it's a poor neighborhood, it's a poor neighborhood, because that means that there are people, there's a community that's representative of that, right? So we are taking this journey together. And so I want to go and just today just kind of make some, clarify some definitions, defining the poverty mentality, a mindset of scarcity, limitation, and dependency regardless of actual resources. So it means that it doesn't matter what your resources are, there is a mentality of scarcity. There's a mentality of limitation. There's a mentality of dependency. You could have two working people in the house and all of these other things, but there's a mentality that is attached to those two people that even when they have a paycheck, that there is something is important. It's important. It's something that you don't understand that is connected to what I will say is a dysfunction, right? Because God's not giving resources and God's not giving all of these particular kinds of things to you so that they can be wasted, right? Five talents, two talents, one talent, right? And so you have to learn how to be good stewards, right? And so what the poverty mentality does, it says that regardless of the resources, regardless of how much money you make, regardless of, you know, what your levels of access are, there is a mentality that's causing you to function in opposition to the real resources that you have. Right. So you can make the money, but never see the money. You can make the money, but can't ever invest the money. You can make the money, but never able to really use that money as a foundation and a structure to build generational wealth, generational success and achievement. Right. Because it's limited. You're limited by your perception. You're limited by your mindset of scarcity. And we normally find this in people that have come from poverty or come from poor circumstances, and they finally get something, but that mentality still works within their home. It still functions within their resources, right? And so, you know, I can quickly tell that they want, first of all, they want people to say that they have it. They'll go back into debt trying to prove to people that they got money. And folks, nine times out of ten, those are not even people who are paying attention to them, right? And so that's what they'll do. And so that's very important, right? And so the second thing that we need to do is to distinguish between structural poverty and psychological poverty. Structural poverty is systemic economic barriers, right? It's those things that have been set up for people to be in an impoverished situation, right? It is the historical frameworks and constructs that limit people based upon race or based upon gender or based upon certain other kinds of differentiations or otherizations, right? And so what in this country, it otherizes and then it prescribes a certain definition to what it otherizes, right? These people can only do this, or these people won't have access to that, or we will redline their community so that they won't have access to mortgages, or we'll let them be in the army, but the GI Bill won't work for them. That's a structural economic barrier that has nothing to do with the individual that it affects. It has everything to do with those who desire for these people to be otherized first, and then that otherization says what you can achieve, what you can have, what you can possess, where you can live, what level of education you can have, what schools you can go to. That is structural poverty. And then we have what we call psychological poverty. It's an internalized beliefs that perpetuate cycles of lack, right? That means that even if there are no structural barriers, there's something inside of the individual that says, I cannot. There's something inside of the individual so that I'll never have. That it is something inside that individual that misuses and mismanages resources. It is something inside of that person whose behaviors perpetuate certain cycles, right? And so I think that's very, very important for us to recognize, right? I think that if when you don't understand that, when you don't understand that's particular internalization of beliefs, right? Because again, I've had to talk to people and I'm like, why do you think that way? Why'd you make that decision? I mean, what was the reason that you did that? And a lot of times they look like deer in headlights because they cannot point to a substantive reason why they made such decisions and or choices in their own lives. And so they can't blame anybody. They can't blame mama, daddy. They can't blame the red man, the white man, the purple man, the blue man. No, there was something on the inside of them that causes them to consistently and continually function in this internalized deficit. Let me say that again. They function in an internalized deficit and they say to themselves, this is what I want to do. These are my choices, right? And, you know, and it's a mentality. It's a mentality, Culture Call. It's a mentality, especially in our community, that we must attack. We've got to attack it from the pulpit. We've got to attack it from the school system. We've got to attack it in our own homes. We've got to attack it from our HBCUs, our schools and universities. We've got to do all of those things to eradicate that particular internalized belief that I should do this and I should do that. You remember when I was talking about bonnets and going to public places of business in your pajamas and in your flip-flops with, you know, flip-flops, right? And you're not looking well-kempt. And we started talking about the twofold principle that's located in the scripture where it says man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart, that God spoke to the prophet Samuel as he was looking for another king in Israel. Right? Saul was being replaced by David. And I told you that those are two principles that we need to master. That yes, God looks at the heart, but men do look at your outward appearance. And I think that's very important. And there were some people that really honestly got miffed by that. But no, you have to understand the constructs of the world. And I'm not talking about the constructs that are man-made. I'm talking about the constructs that are divinely set up. That's just how it is. Men look at the outward appearance, right? Right? And that's important. That when people see you, they judge how you chose, watch this, to represent yourself. Surely you could have gotten up earlier, washed your face, done your hair, put on something that is that can represent you as a person of dignity before you went to go handle your business. You did not have to come in these people's businesses. Yes, in the rental car service, with your bonnet, with your baby and a pamp on the shoulder, your hair not cut, your hair not combed. I mean, looking like you just rolled out of bed trying to get these folks' cars. You know what they're gonna do? You don't have to like it. Let me tell you the truth. They're going to ignore you. Now, here's the truth. Here's the truth of the matter. And even people who look like you, people of your race and ethnicity are going to overlook you as well. You know why? Because they're like, you can't be serious. Right? Because out of all the things you decided and chose to do, you decided to represent yourself in the public like that. Right? And so, you know, that's not racial. That's not, you know, that's not racism at all. That is, people are choosing to mirror how you chose to what? Represent yourself. Right? And so that's important. That is important. And so what God was saying to Samuel, the prophet Samuel in that case, was that, yes, here is the principle. When you're looking for somebody that looks like a king. Right? But this is what I provided for myself, and I have hidden kingship, my choice, in a shepherd boy, right? Because he's a man after my own heart. Please don't apply that. That is not universal in every situation. He's specifically talking about David. Right. He's specifically talking about David. He's not talking. You can't just apply that to everybody and anybody that you want to. No, he's specifically talking about David in that text. Right. And so what I'm saying is, if the prophet, the Bible, who says whose words have never fallen to the ground, that was Samuel's description, y'all, his words never fell to the ground. If the prophet is looking by his own eye, if the prophet is looking for a king or the next leader of Israel by his own, with his own ocular subjectivity, then the principle lies even today, that when people come and you come in looking for a job and they see how you present yourself, they watch this. They're looking at you and imagining how you're going to represent their company. If you can't represent yourself with dignity, I know you're not going to do that for my business. And so can you get mad when you don't get the job? No. Can you cry racism when you don't get the job? No. No, because that would be structural. That would be, you have all things together. You've got the degrees, you got the certifications, you got the experience, and then they hire someone based upon the color of your skin, hire someone that with a lesser experience, less of all that, simply because of their own prejudice. That's structural. That's not what this is. I'm talking about now psychological. They're looking at how you chose to represent yourself and saying, well, I don't want you representing my company, sir. That's why you didn't get the job. It wasn't racial. No, it was very personal. And they're saying you can't represent you, so you can't represent me. Now, I know this might make some of y'all a little tight, but guess what? Good medicine is bitter at first, but I promise you it's going to help you. And that's the facts. That is the facts. I'm talking to my people. That's the facts, right? And so they're looking at that when you come to school, their school, and you represent your child in that kind of way, the administration look like, well, if that's the way you view your child, to represent your child like that as their father or their mother, and you come to school doing business like this, then why are you fussing about how we treat your child? Because obviously you can't care about your child in the way you presented yourself. And see, again, don't say, I don't have the money. People don't have the money to do such and so. No, that's not true. I've been studying people. No, they pay for what they want to. They don't go to the club like that. They don't represent themselves when they're trying to impress somebody like that. So don't, no. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You won't get away with that. You won't get away with that at all. At all. And so, you know, you have to think about all of those internalized poverty representations that affect us. And, you know, when your children go out, you go. That's how you're going out. You're not going out looking like that. Go in there, comb your hair, and brush your teeth. And you're not leaving my house looking. I don't care if you live in Section 8 in the ghetto, in the projects, or whatever, what side of town you live on. There is a standard of how you, when you leave your house, how you present yourself, because that's mentality. That is internalized mentality. Yes, we all live in here. You, a single mom, a single dad in this house, we are going to, you know, even a two-parent home. When you leave out of this house, you are representing who we are in the world. And we will not allow you to leave my house looking this certain way. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, that's what we're dealing with today. This whole internalized poverty mentality. Man, goodness gracious, this is going to be a good show. Y'all call your neighbor, call your friend, tell everybody get in to this flight. We are about to take off. Hey, keep it locked right here on the Culture Call with your boy, L. Spencer Smith, on Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK, The Truth. There's more to come. This is the world. And we are back right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith. And we are having a great morning talking about this, attacking this poverty mentality, and talking about the difference between structural and psychological poverty. And a lot of us, yes, are have to face and deal with structural poverty with regards to racist and, you know, just the constructs in this country, capitalism, right? It's not really race, it's capitalism, a lot of times class and all those different kinds of things. But beyond that culture call, we need to have a conversation concerning internalized psychological poverty. And that is the actions and the habits and the choices that we make as individuals that have community reverberation, right? That you can make a decision in your house and with your family that has other effects on the entire community, right? And the people that you are around. And I think that's very important as we have this discussion about, you know, poverty and how we can get out of it, how can we change it, et cetera. I think it's a very important conversation. You know, Marshall McLuhan says this. It says, we become what we behold. We shape our tools, and thereafter our tools shape us. And I think that's very important to understand that God has given us all a set of tools beyond every you know, systemized construct. God has given us all tools, right? You know, I've been fussing, going back and forth with people online talking about, you know, black people are always operate from a level of victimization and all that, which, you know, is untrue. Which is untrue on its face, because we built half this country for free, right? Most of this country for free, right? And every season, black people have arisen to the occasion to still participate, right? And you know, a guy was online fussing at me and going online, you know, and I remain academic and I remain spiritual, right? And I said, you know, y'all just hate white folks. Y'all just hate white folks. I said, first of all, let's understand this. Number one, let's do a quick history lesson. Number one, the whole issue of whiteness does not mean white people. Whiteness is a structure that was the antecedent for another structure that they originated called blackness in the 1400s in Europe, right? So they created this idea of blackness along with the church at that time. Along with the church in Europe at that time, they created this construct of blackness so that they would feel that there was some level of divine permission that was given to enslave people from Africa, right? And so first thing that they did, they caused a differentiation by the label blackness, right? And then they came back after they started with blackness and said, okay, well, we gotta make a further definition, a further construct, and they called it whiteness, right? So that in their framework, everything black would be demonized and enslaved and destined to poverty and to labor, and whiteness, you know, everything is good. That's where you get the whole idea of angel fool's cake and devil fool's cake, right? That's why you get that everything that is pure and righteous was painted in its art, in its iconography, was white, right? And that's why, that's where the whole idea of Jesus being made white, because that was the symbolization. But that's not biblical. It started in the 1400s, right? When the Bible talks about race, he's talking about, the word there is ethos, which is ethnicity. That means different regions and cultures and things of that nature. It's not race as the construct that it was made in the 1400s, right? And so he didn't know he was dealing with an educated person. So I pressed the degree. So I said, so when you, that's the first thing. So nobody is saying white people, because they are really, they have been historically white allies from the time of enslavement up until the present time. They have been white allies, people who have been against white people who helped on the Underground Railroad. They were fighting against enslavement and all that kind. See, so racism, just like whiteness, just like blackness, is a construct. Blackness is a construct because it was a word given to define the underbelly of society and culture, right? When you, there is a chart in theological chart that it's the chart of being and non-being, right? And it was constructed again at the 1400s, and it was used in the 1800s and all of that to provide the construct of chattel slavery in America, right? Which is why they can say that they're for this and still be Christian. Because in their mind, they created historical constructs that support it. But remember that the church at that time, not the apostolic biblical church of the first century, we're talking about the church of the 1400s that were living in the, what they call the dark ages, right? They constructed all these things, and unfortunately, there are a lot of people that still function in that dark age, enlightenment kind of situation that's going on with all of these particular constructs. So I said, that's the first thing, right? That's the first thing. Nobody, I'm not talking to you because I don't know you, sir. You know what I'm saying? I don't know you, so nobody hates you. You know, some of my favorite teachers, some of my favorite people were Caucasian people, right? No, so I don't have no issue with you, right? Number one. Number two, however, you have an issue because you're trying to frame a people and use that framing to suggest that these people currently are like this. But black people never function under the scheme of blackness. Let me try it again. That black people never functioned under the construct of blackness. Blackness was put upon us so that it could justify the treatment of the system against us. All right? So, yeah, and he got quiet. I'm hoping that he responds because, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, your argument needs to go do some research, right? Because, yeah, so don't try to do that. And so that it's the whole idea of you giving me something that is lesser. And historically, what we've been able to do is that we've been able to make straw bricks out of straw. We've been able to take the lesser and make universities. We took our pennies, our foreparents took pennies and built, homes, built neighborhoods, built thriving businesses, built HBCUs, built, you know, all of that, built churches and all this, right? Our foreparents, so we know how to take a little and make a lot, to make the antithesis of what they think about us, right? And so that's what I mean, what the writer means, Marshall McLuhan says, we become what we behold. We shape our tools, and then after our tools shape us, right? And so when I talk to students about, you know, kids talking about HBCUs, that's what I'm talking about. Those, that HBCU that you're looking at, that was built by the little tools, the little money that a few black folk had, right? And they built a whole HBCU because they couldn't, by structure, go to other schools, right? They couldn't, by structural design, go to other schools. I mean, in this very city, not too far from where I sit, so when you look at HBCU, you're looking at something that was built by your ancestors with nothing, out of nothing. Not that it was ex nihilo, you know, when I say out of nothing, but I'm talking about they had very little. They pulled together as a community and built some of the most prestigious universities and colleges in the country that produce black leadership, black entrepreneurship, black prosperity. Historically, right? And so what I'm saying is you can look at what you have, and I don't care where you start off. If you use it, tie it to faith, tie it to, you know, learning and research, you can take that family that you think is a liability on paper and create a legacy, a lasting legacy in this country. Yes, you can do it. I've seen it done over and over again, right? But many people don't understand that. And so they amplify the fallacy that, you know, we are impoverished in resources, and watch this, because we are impoverished in mind. And so when you do that, people start thinking that it's true when it's not. You can't structurally section me to a side of town where you depleted of resources and then talk about me and create a narrative by how I'm struggling and why I don't have in the whole construct that you created. And that is what's going on. And a lot of our people are even buying into that. And I'm here to tell you that's not true. It doesn't matter where you start. I started off at 106 Phoenix Drive in Monk's Corner, South Carolina. And we were I remember that they used to pay me. What did I tell y'all what my favorite fruit was? That's right, a plum, right? They used to pay me in plums to move dead rats beyond our console TV. We would smell it in the house trying to figure out, and nobody wanted to touch it, and they would pay me to pick it up with a paper bag and throw that rat out. I'm not talking about a mouse. I said a rat out of my house. And so I know how it feels to have a house with a foundation leaning because they didn't build it properly. I understand all of that. How to be so very cold that you had to sleep with your brothers and sleep with gas heater on and all that, that didn't heat the whole house. I know that. How it feels to look in your refrigerator and all you got is mayonnaise and all you got is a pack of light bread and some hot dogs because you don't have no money to buy nothing else. I know what it is about. You see what I'm saying? I know what it's like for somebody to see you and have pity on you and give you a pack of peanuts and some Coke so you can eat and drink something. So that what I'm saying. And now, however, my parents taught us, still in that condition, when you leave this house, you look like you're somebody. You look like you're going somewhere. And each and every one of my brothers now are at the top of, you know, of their, of where of our particular, sectors of life. Great families, great wives, living in great places. Children are educated, every last one of them. Yes. All of us decided like that. You see what I'm saying? So don't tell me you can't do no better where you are. No. The system can be designed to structurally against you. But if your mind is in a place that the only resource that I have, first of all, is life, health, and strength. If I've got a solid mind, I can take my mind and get me out of any space and any place that I find myself in. Period. That I can do that, and I can take not just that and create a legacy and create a standard of living for my family and a mentality that I impute into all of my children and to all of my grandchildren. Absolutely. This is what I'm talking about. And so we take the tools that we have been given, whether they are divine or whether they've been structured against us. We can take our slingshot and five smooth stones and still defeat Goliath. You feel what I'm saying? We can take the rods that's in our hand and still get across the Red Sea. You see what I'm saying? We can take a cross and a tomb, a borrowed tomb, and still go out and be a part of saving the world. We've got examples of all. We have the resources. We have the tools, but it depends on what you do with the tools. Allow that moment to shape you. I don't want to come across preachy, but it is what it is. You see what I'm saying? I understand. I'm not negating the fact that there are structural things that may be against you. But what I can tell you from experience, that you can rise above those things that have been structurally against you and become successful, right? You can become successful. You can become successful because it is not as hard on us as it was on our parents and our foreparents, right? The stories that they used to share with us and the ways that they had to live and do things, I was like, I don't know how y'all made it through. But they taught us that not to cause us to be, limited, or to deter us or to limit us or to give us an excuses for limitation. They said that if I could make it through this, outhouses, if I could make it through having to have a wood stove and cutting wood so that we could both eat and have heat, if we can make it through all of that, if we could make it through water hoses and dogs being placed on us at South Carolina State and Claflin University now, if we could do that, if we could go to jail for desiring to vote or sit in and have ketchup pointed and milk and all that stuff poured on our heads and we made it thus far, if we could do all of that, then yeah, then you can do it too. You can make it through this season too. Absolutely. You can make it too. And I live long enough and my parents live long enough, not just to get us out of poverty and then we pull them out as well. We pulled them out of that situation. And of course, they were doing good. And, you know, even before we got to where we were, they started doing better then. So what I'm telling you, it can be generational culture call. We got to make up the mind not to have any excuses. If you got excuses, I'm not the person to talk to, because I'm going to tell you that little becomes much. And that is truth. Little becomes much when we place it in, you know, the master's hand. Little becomes much when we place it in the master's hand. And not only place it in the master's hand, but when we utilize our own hands. When we utilize our own hands, we can Rumpelstiltskin an entire generation. When they take away the, they can give us straw and we can make, you know, gold bricks, right? I mean, it is what it is. It is what it is. Especially right now, if you are looking at your pocketbook or you're looking at the surroundings, we can have a community lift up, that we can have a community challenge. All of our children are going to get A's this year. All of our children are going to get scholarships. I don't care if they're cutting back. I don't care if they're cutting back scholarships. Hear me what I tell you. That I, you know, here's my spiritual quote for today. The Lord will make a way. What? Somehow. Absolutely. That's why HBCUs were created. Again, you know, when I talk about HBCUs, I have folks that, you know, went to PWIs. I ain't talking about them. I'm not mad at them. I'm not upset at them. You know, one of my brothers and my sister, they went to a PWI, the University of South Carolina, the Gamecocks, right? But, you know, my baby brother, he went to Florida State. I went to an HBCU like my parents. All of my wife, I met at my HBCU. My children, all of them went to HBCUs. They got their masters at PWI, NYU, and Wake Forest, you know, respectively. You know, so again, we're not against PWIs. But what I'm saying, if you're talking about identity, if you're talking about breaking the curse, if you're talking about I can't afford, then this is what we have Alabama A&M, Alabama State, Stillman. This is why we have those schools, Miles. This is why we have Florida A&M. This is why we have those schools, that we can begin to talk to the people that can help us find a way to make it happen. And then all of our children don't have to go to a college, a four-year university. They can go to a two-year college and get a certification and create entrepreneurial business, electricians, HVAC. They can do all of that. Instead of making excuses, let's find a way. That's the mentality of prosperity. Instead of making excuses, let's find a way. Listen, I got to take a break, and I know you need one too. But tell somebody, hey, tune into the Culture Call. This man is spitting facts and empowering us today. Don't you dare miss it. Keep it locked right here. This is the world premiere. And we are back. It's the top of the hour. 11 a.m. and some change right here on the Culture Call. That's right. Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK. The truth. And we have been having an amazing day. Listen, want to welcome all of our second hour listeners. Yay, you made it. Hey, we've got enough room for you. As a matter of fact, we laid over just for you. Find you a seat. I'm telling you, it's going to be a great ride to our destination. And I'm telling you, all day long, we've been talking about this poverty mentality and the difference between structural poverty and psychological poverty, right? It's important because, again, we do recognize that there is structural poverty, but we can rise above it if we break the stronghold of internalized psychological poverty. And that's kind of what we've been talking about on today. Right. So definitely I want to welcome all of our second hour listeners. You are right on time for our conversation today. Want to remind you all, if you're not following me on Facebook, please do so. Go to Facebook, open it up and type in the Culture Call. There you're going to see my face. Hit that thumbs up button and now you're a part of our online family. And as always, you can definitely email me at culturecall.praise@gmail.com. That's culturecall.praise@gmail.com to send me your public service announcement so I can tell everybody the wonderful, awesome, phenomenal things that you're doing to empower our community. Would you do that for me? Great. Listen, I got a quote that I want to start off, and it's by Stephen Covey. He says, abundance mentality flows out of a deep inner sense of personal worth and security. It is the paradigm that there is plenty out there and enough to spare for everybody. That is powerful, right? That his whole idea is that you can't have abundance and reverse this whole idea of poverty thinking. And I'm talking about internally, if you don't first of all, develop a sense of abundance, that there is a deep sense inside of me that, yes, there is more for me out there, and not only just for me, but everybody can have it. That takes abundance and prosperity to, you know, and I think that's probably a better word than the prosperity gospel, because I think right now, you know, that's been probably perverted in our culture, in our society. But I like the abundance gospel. I love that, because that, I mean, both of them the Bible teaches, but I don't think abundance gospel has been really understood. When Jesus said in John 10, he says in verse 10, the thief come but to steal, kill, and destroy, but the latter clause says, but I am come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. And not just to limit that to wealth and poverty, but that text there in the Greek is, I've come that you might have Zoe, the God kind of life, that abundance living, an abundance mentality, prosperity living, prosperity mentality begins when we adopt, the God kind of living for ourselves, that we move beyond man-made structures, man influence mentalities. We move beyond generational decisions and choices, and we begin to develop within ourselves an abundance construct that I may not have all of it now, but there is abundance out there for me. And if there is abundance out there for me, I believe that abundance is communal, right? That even though the text says the poor you will have with you always, that I don't have to be the poor. I can be those who are lifting people up out of their poverty. And whether that is mental poverty or substantive poverty, that I can live an abundant life such that speaks to that, right? And that is a positive, divine, communal way of thinking. And so to Stephen Covey's point, you have to develop an abundance mentality. That expectation and hope and possibility lie in front of you, right? The text agrees with me when it says, now faith is the substance of things what? Hope for. And so what happens when you lose your hope, you will end up in infinite poverty, because it is that hope and expectation. It is that inspiration that more is out there, more for me to do, more for me to have, more for me to acquire, right? That is connected to my name, that is connected to my purpose, right? That is connected to my destiny. It is that mentality that causes us to unfold in a different kind of way and to move in the world in a different kind of a modality, right? That it can cause us to say, you know what? There's more. I'm going after it. And, you know, again, these labels of billionaire, millionaire, trillionaire, they are designed further to sectionalize and marginalize and separate us from a certain class, right? Because people who have a mentality, and it's a poverty mentality, right? You think because they're millionaires, billionaires, and trillionaires that they don't have a poverty mentality. Yes, they do. Because they don't know how to utilize their resources to empower others without control and or manipulation, or creating a system that the systems that will always keep them on the top. So that, by definition, is psychological poverty, right? So again, poverty works regardless of resources, right? It moves in that space of the mind. And so, you know, a person who's got a lot that won't give and won't share and won't create systems of lifting other people up, and you got a person that's not making that much, but they share what they have, that they are liberal, that person that doesn't have that monetary amount is the person who is living in abundance. And that person who has all that money but doesn't share it and cannot use that money as tools to help other people answer their questions and bring other people up are disconnected and are in poverty, right? That's important. One of the things we see from the first church is that those who were rich sold whatever properties they had, didn't sell all their property, but they sold the properties they had so that the people that were poor among them could have something, so that they all what? Could have things in common, and we wouldn't have to worry about how much you got, you stealing from me, or you feeling threatened or embarrassed or insecure about who I am. No, we're going to give to you and lift you up as well. And that's what it means about communal prosperity, communal abundance, is that we take what we have and we make sure that others have it as well, right? And so it's important. It's important. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, and it's the last of human freedoms, and that is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. What does that mean? That means that we get to choose. The moment that we no longer get to choose the kinds of life that we live, that is the moment of abject poverty. And that is one of the things that God has given us that no person should be able to take away. That's what made chattel slavery so very egregious in this country, because it took away choice. It took away our foreparents' opportunity to choose how they would move in life. Right? That's why it stole inventions, it stole creations, it stole art, it stole all of these things that system did, so that people would feel like they have no other choice but then to depend on plantation living. And so one of the greatest things that God has given to all of us is the ability for us to choose, 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 choose ye this day. Right. As for me and my house, here's our decision. Right. And so what I want to say to you, Culture Call, is that you have to learn how to protect your ability to choose. Right. I don't care where you're starting from now. If you're listening to me, and or if you need to give this to somebody, your family, tell them, tap in. Once you lose your ability to choose, that's what makes prison and jail so egregious. That's what makes the 13th Amendment so very dangerous, because one of the things it does, it takes away the power to choose. You can no longer vote. You got to stay in jail. They tell you what to do, when to get up, when to go, what to do, to use your strength to build industries, products for no wealth, no accruement of your life, right? And so that's it, that the power to not choose, to not be able to choose, is one of the worst things that we ever face in a generation. This is why I caution our young people to understand their bodies, understand their sexuality, understand that God has given them levels of agency. God has given them levels that whereby they have the choose. Like, when, before before you have that baby, before you give your body to somebody else, you have to understand the power of choice. That who you are as a man, you give out seed as a young man. Your seed is potent. Your seed is powerful. Your seed is precious. Your seed will determine your future. It is how you get to the next dimension. It is how you get to the next next season of life. It is how you build generations. So think about who you share your seed with. Young baby, you are an incubator for seed. So make sure, because you might let a fool and give fool an access to another generation to live out by having their baby, right? So you have to think about that. It's not just about, we made sex and that conversation so very icky and so very religious, and it's not really understanding the spirituality of what God has done there. He has given you the opportunity through the sexual relationship to be fruitful and multiply, right? He's given that in Genesis chapter number 1, verse 26 through 28. He's given you the opportunity to replicate his image of in the earth, the imago Dei in the earth. And so we have to teach our young people that, I know you and boyfriend, love is expensive. Love is an economy. Yes, love is endearment. Yeah. But you have to understand, it is also an economy. Right? Love is also an economic decision. It is an eternal decision. Yes. It's an enduring decision. Yes. It is an enchanting decision. Yes. I love you. Do you love me? Mark X in the box. All these dates and all of this, and slow dances at the dance, and holding hands and all that kind of stuff. But when you get to engage in love to a place to where love begins to tap into the treasure of sexuality, that's not just an enchanting, it's an enduring situation, and it's also an economic decision. And the Book of Solomon, Songs of Solomon, says that you shouldn't stir love until love can please you. What is the inference there, Culture Call? That there is a season that if you tap into love too soon or with the wrong person, that that love won't please you. That's the inference. That's the context clues. And we need to tell the truth about it. We need to preach it from the pulpit because it's in the Bible. You have to tell it from a clear understanding. Listen, and remove this whole idea of purity culture. Attached to hell, a purity culture that's attached to righteousness and all these kinds of things. No, you got to understand it in the plain, in the terms. You're not ready to have that kind of decision. This is, you're right, you will produce hell because now you got a baby you can't take care of. Now y'all fighting when y'all out in the street, who gonna have custody over the child. Now you got half of your income, a part of your income got to go to somebody who you no longer like, that was just a one night stand, or who you were just faking that you loved for a moment, and now you got a child with them, and now y'all got to do the future together, and you both have to do the future with somebody that you can't care for or you don't like because of the love y'all had and the sex y'all had produced an economy, produced a baby, produced a fruit that none of you all know how to take care of. And so we've got to begin to teach it like that. Teach it, and so they will understand it in the language of their culture, in the language of their age. And that's how I teach it. I don't teach it. When I was taught about love and sex, it was always about, you know, don't do this and don't do that and don't do that. No, no, no. I just want you to know that once you get in this spot, if you get in this place, it could produce these decisions because you're not ready to handle that decision yet. It's an issue of the revelation of readiness. Love, sex is an issue of readiness. I'm going to say it again. Love and sex. And y'all, listen to me. Stop trying to equate it to the culture of the Bible and teach the lessons that the Bible leaves us. Right? There are laws. When they were in the Bible, they were at 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. A different culture in time. Right? It's not that now. It's not that. You cannot inflict or impute Americanized, Westernized culture on a Near Eastern culture, right? A Northern African culture. You can't do that. You are supposed to learn the lessons, but you can't say, well, they had sex at 13, 14, 15 in the Bible. It was another level of responsibility then. But here, there are laws against that, right? These people, these kids are still living with you. Right? You ain't got no cows and no calves to give them that they can go off, and dowries that you can go and start a family with. So don't do that. Oh my goodness. Please don't do that. Don't do that. I teach a course now talking about how to read, the art of the read, right? I'm teaching a course of doing that right now. And some people mess people's lives up because they read the text wrong. Understand that it's to serve the present age. Don't we line at him on Sunday? To serve the present age, my calling to fulfill. That's what my job is, to serve the present age, not in Moses's age, not in Abraham's age, not in David's age. Come on, to serve the present age, the one that we live in right now. And so here it is. The power of choice is connected to poverty. The power of choice. If you use your choices well, it will turn into abundance. If you use your choices incorrectly, it will turn into poverty. Period, Culture Call. And let's not conflate, obfuscate or change the narrative. It is what it is. And many of you are listening to me now. That if you could choose again, y'all, I need a Hammond B3 in my studio. I need somebody to back me up because I feel E-flat crawling up my spine. Here's the deal, y'all. If you could choose again, right? If you could go back in time and choose again, I promise you, you would make another choice. For how your life has turned out with the people and the person that you decided to love and to be with and all these different kinds, if you could make another choice, I promise you, a lot of you would. And so why do we not teach that to our children? Why do we not teach that to our people? We have to do that. in order for us to protect and to prepare and to propel the next generation. Right? And so that's important. And that's a problem. And so, you know, I don't understand why we have difficulties with that. But this man says you can choose your attitude. You can make your choices now. Position yourself that you can maximize your choice toward abundance. I'm teaching it here. I know I am. Make sure you can maximize your choice toward abundance, meaning stop making poverty choices and decisions. You know why? Because every choice, every decision is connected inextricably to a consequence. You can make your choice, but you can't choose your consequence. Right? Absolutely. And so this is what we got to understand, right? See, Dennis Kimbrough says this: wealth is not a matter of intelligence, race, or social privilege. It is a matter of vision, discipline, and faith. And this is what we're talking about. You got to start making wealth choices, abundance choices, healthy choices. You know, a moment of transparency. You know, I didn't like my last doctor's report. I didn't like it. I did not like it one bit, you know. And so I'm saying to myself, okay, I'm not going to wait for them to prescribe anything. I'm going to make some different choices in my life. There are things I'm not going to eat. There are things I'm not going to stress about anymore, so I can get my blood pressure down. I'm going to get my sodium down. I'm going to get this cholesterol down. All of these things. You see? We're waiting for the Spirit, Jehovah Rapha, to heal us, and he is a healer. I believe a supernatural healer. I promise you, from the crown of our heads to the very soles of our feet, he can do what no other power can do. We've been singing it. God specializes, right? But I'm not going to make decisions and put myself in a position to where I've got to depend on God's supernatural healing for me and got to keep quoting scriptures over my life when every day I make decisions and choices that are counter narrative to the reality that God is a healer. He is also a disciplinarian. He is also the one that will order our steps in the way that we should go. God is not ordering my steps in this age to be eating pies and cakes and all that. I don't care how much the saints cook it. I don't have to eat it. And they know I love them. I love them hard. I love my people hard. But I tell them, church mothers, I'm not eating all that cake. I ain't eating no pie. You know, I got a birthday coming up on Thursday. And I tell them, hey, I might do a part of a cupcake, or I might do a slice of sweet potato pie. But I can't eat now in my 50s like I was in my teens and my 20s. No, absolutely. I can't. Now, maybe you can. But I cannot. I got to get up and exercise. I got to keep this body moving, keep these muscles moving. I got to make sure my protein stays up, healthy protein, that is. I have to make a decision. I have to make a choice according to the life that I want. Let me say that again. I've got to make choices according to the life that I want. And if I want to live as long as my mom and my parents did and my dad did, if I want to live way into my 70s, up into my 80s and my 90s, if I want to do that because that's my desire, 100 if the Lord wants to give it to me, if that's what I want to do, then I've got to make decisions according to the life, opposed to anything. You know, I got to go see the doctor. I got to listen to what they tell me, you know. While I'm going to the gym, I'm still going to take the blood pressure medicine. While I'm going to the gym, I'm still going to drink the apple cider vinegar. I'm still going to do that. I'm still going to watch what I eat. I have a decision to make that is very, very important. Yes, important to the life I'm expecting. Now, I know no man knows the hour or the time in which they're going to leave here. But here it is. I asked the Lord to let me leave from finished. Not any kind of disease. That's my desire. Lord, that you allow me to take care of myself and, you know, my family, that I can leave from finished. I want to see my great grandchildren. That's my desire. Right? But guess what? I cannot make decisions that are counterintuitive to my desires and expect that heaven is just going to keep intervening according to my bad decisions. Here's what I mean. You can't, listen, sis, you can't keep laying down and then think and praying that God caused the rabbit not to die. Sir, you can't keep doing these things and expecting the police not to catch you. You got to change your mind. You got to figure out what are your true options that are, what is your desire? What is your expectation? Because that's the greatest wealth that God has endowed you with. Hell, that's right. They used to ask us in culture call when we were growing up, and I know some of y'all remember this, what do you want to be what when you grow up? They used to ask us that. In church, our family used to ask us that. In school, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I think we need to revisit those questions. And we need to, I want to be a football player. Okay, what else do you want to be? Because what if that doesn't work? Pull on them. Pull on their minds. Because again, they aspire to that because that's what they see. They aspire to that because that's what the media shows them. They think that that is the epitome of success. That's why in the 80s and in the 90s, a lot of our young boys wanted to be drug dealers because that's what was being shown to them as successful. Right? But show them doctors, show them lawyers, show them entrepreneurs, show them business people who are doing great and amazing things. This is what you do. That's how it works. We create a mental picture of hope, aspiration, and expectation. Yeah. Show them successful women, successful men. Talk to them about it. Show it to them. Take them to museums. Take them to other places other than the football game, other than the sports game. Right? Take them to places that will stimulate their imagination, that will stimulate their hopes and their dreams, that will show them the people that have accomplished. We get an opportunity to shape our future by our expectation. You don't have to worry about poverty when you've got an expectation of abundance. That, yeah, this is what I want to be. This is what I want to do. Right? And then a lot of our athletes go and they and make it, and then they go poor because they're trying to pull a whole family who never had prosperity training or abundance mentality, and now they're paying for everybody's car, everybody's house. That's not how that should work. You're leeching off of the future when the future is supposed to go forward, not backwards. You feel what I'm saying? Listen, don't hate me because I tell you the truth. I love you all, Coach Call, but we got to start dealing with some real decisions and choice making. Yeah, that's exactly what we have to do. Listen, I got to take a break, but I need y'all to stay right here with your boy, Elston Smith, right here on the Coach Call, Praise 93.3 FM, 790 WTSK. This is the world premiere. And we are back, family. Family, Culture Call. Listen, we've been having a conversation today. Absolutely. You know what? I think it's imperative for us to really get a grasp on, you know, what it means to really be abundance minded and lose the mentality and the psychology that there is something divinely, righteously, fundamentally wrong with believing for wealth, believing for healthy family structures, healthy generations. I think we've got to change our theology. Our churches have to change that mentality. I think that's part and parcel of part of the, you know, the separation between the educated and those who are religious. The church and perhaps even the mission of the HBCUs, there's a counter narrative that there is something inherently wicked that people don't like folk that have, right? And I think that's been taught in our country, taught in our world, you know, that wealth and abundance is something wrong with that, or somebody has done something nefariously if they have, you know, money, if they live in a nice neighborhood, or they're able to choose or have a plethora of choices in terms of their life. I think many people look at other folks as if they are robbing or they're doing something wrong to be in these positions of places, right? And so we've got to change that narrative and that mentality as well. And not only that, hear me now, also what we have to do is we've got to change the shame of the decision making. You know, Brene Brown says, shame corrodes the very part of us that believes we are capable of change. And I think that's very important. That we don't make the young lady who's had a child out of wedlock feel shame and guilt. She's already made that decision. We don't make the young man who has children out of wedlock, who he is struggling to take care of, that he's made a bad decision. Or not just that he made a bad decision, but the shame of that decision we force him to live under. Or if somebody lives in poverty, we got to be careful of even how we empower, because sometimes people read empowerment as shame. And we've got to make sure that, you know, that we are being very clear that as we attack the problem, we're not attacking the persons. You hear me, Coach Call? Because I think a lot of people, they shun messages because they feel ashamed or guilt. And guilt can rob them of the capacity to change or to make another choice. Right? And so, you know, on one hand, you got this whole idea that, yeah, we don't like people who have. But then you got, on the other hand, people who don't have walk under this profound level of shame. Right? And we've got to deal with both of those. Yes, there is nothing wrong with having, but if you don't have it right now, right, that there are paths and ways that you can get it. And if you made decisions that put you in a place that limited your options, then here, come to the community and we can put you and set you on the right path, right? I think that those have to, that's the work, Culture Call, that we have to do as a community that helps each other out of the pit, right? That we use, watch this, and I'm saying this as a pastor, a churchman, been in church all my life. We have used shame and guilt as a weapon or as a tool of additional punishment when that is antithetical to true Christocentric biblical teaching. Because it says the strong ought bear the infirmity of the weak. Right? If you see Galatians, I believe it says, if you see your brother that is overtaken, Galatians 6, overtaken by a fault, ye who are spiritual are supposed to do the ministry and the work of restoration. Restore them back to a place. Right? And so we've got to eradicate this righteousness, our righteous, and I do that in air quotes, this righteous fealty, loyalty that we have of making people shame or guilty of past choices, especially when you don't know their journey, and hold them accountable to their future. Yes. I was dealing with a situation with one of my friends, and he made some really bad decisions. And we went through that, and I was walking him through it, and just telling him, and then, you know, walking him through some really difficult situations. And then we were in a group chat, and he put in the group chat about a circumstance, something that was being adjudicated in the legal system. And one of my sons said to him, here's what he said. He said, I'm glad that it didn't go the way that you thought it was going to go. I'm glad that they, you know, did some things. He says, but now make a decision to live as a free man. I was like, yo, he says, now make a decision to live. Cause it was a situation of his own doing, but now he has another decision. Now that there has been a reversal of fortune, now our accountability is not to hold him to the shame of the previous decision. Our now responsibility is to hold him accountable to the new decision and the new choice that he has available to him. You feel me, Coach Call? Yeah. You didn't get life in prison. You got probation. But now live as a free man. Live like you appreciate freedom. Live like that. Make decisions and choices that won't end you back up. That's not shame. That's accountability. I'm not talking about what you did in your past. We can't change that. We've lived through that. Listen, you can't put the baby back. You can't do none of that over, sir. You can't. No. Live now like a free man. Take care of your responsibilities. Have a conversation of how we a mature conversation and an emotionally intelligent conversation of how you're going to move forward. And live like a free man. Live like a man that is on his way to making choices of abundance that will further your options and not your limitations. And this is what we have to do. This is what we have to do. You know, Proverbs says, and as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And so that we have to perfect the ministry of sharpening, not shame. Woo! Did y'all hear that? We have to perfect the ministry of what? Sharpening and not shame. They already own shame. Right? The standard is the not reaching to the level of the standard is the thing that shames. So they're already living in that. See, we can't, don't diminish the standard because in the standard is the shame mechanism when they don't meet it. But our job after they, okay, good. We are here to sharpen you. We are here for the process because now you made a decision and we can't change the decision for you. We got to help you and walk you through the decision. Absolutely. However, comma, now we're going to hold you accountable. Don't put yourself back in that situation again. There are better decisions. We're going to hold you accountable to the future you say you want to have. You see what I'm saying? We are going to hold you accountable to the future that you say that you want to have. Absolutely. We're going to sharpen you. It's the ministry of sharpening and not the ministry of shame. Let me say that one more time because I love that. Do you get it? The ministry of sharpening as opposed to the ministry of shame. We got to do that. And if we don't do that, we are derelict. We are derelict in our responsibility to each other. Yeah. And so one of the things that I believe that, you know, I don't know how many people that are, you know, culture call is going to affect. But I believe if there's something that you need to share with somebody, you need to share this broadcast. We'll put it on archives because y'all need to listen. Somebody you need to share to because you love them. The greatest asset, the greatest capital that you have right now is the ability to choose. And your choices decide for you. And when you decide, now you got to figure out because your choices are your thoughts that are going on inside of you. Your decisions are what's on the outside of you. And now when your choices and your thoughts get on the outside of you, then there are principles that are at play now. There are principles at play now that you got to live through. And so my thing is we've got to begin to encourage each other to live by better principles. To live by better designs, to live by an abundance mentality, an abundance model, right? That how is this decision going to further me? How are these choices going to further me toward the direction of abundance that I want to have? How? And if you can't say, how is sleeping around? How is going to bed with this person? How is, you know, making this decision to do this going to limit or to advance my abundance destiny? How? And we have to, yes, hold each other what? Accountable. That's what we have to do. That is what we have to do. And sometimes accountability, culture call, here's the truth. It don't feel good because some people are so steeped in that. What you trying to say? No. I ain't trying to say it. I've said it. I've tried to direct my language so that when somebody says, what you trying to say? No. No, rewind the tape. I wasn't trying to say it. I wasn't stumbling over my words. I said exactly what I needed to say for this situation. Now, how you feel about what I say is what you got to navigate. But we don't have to navigate the nuances of what I said because I told you the truth. I told you the thing that was going to empower you. Now you feel a certain way about that. Now you got to make sure before you feel a certain way, Am I your agent to hurt you and harm you in what I said? Or am I your agent to hold you accountable and to speak truth so that you can remain free? Right? That's what you got to figure out. Man, I don't like her because she always... No. Did mama tell you the truth? Or, you know, are you mad about how you feel about what she said? Did daddy spit facts to you? Or you're upset, you're in your feelings because those facts didn't agree with your mentality? That's what you have to figure out. You see? Right. So, and it's not what I'm saying. It's how you feel about what I'm saying. And see, when everybody's talking, bring your research. I'm going to bring my research and come, let's reason together, as Isaiah said. Let's reason together. Let's see how we can come to a place of parity. Let's see where truth can be discovered. Let's see where light can shine. Let's see where we can dispel darkness. Period. Let's see how we can do that. Absolutely. See, so when you don't get mad at the truth teller. Hello, get upset because you feel a certain way about the truth being spoken. About the truth being spoken. And when you begin to adjust yourself in that direction, guess what's going to happen? You're going to see yourself open up into a new and a fantastic life that God has set for you. Okay? Yeah. Listen, I'm getting ready to land this plane, y'all. It's been a great day, but I need y'all to keep it locked right here. There's much more to come. Well, family, we have come to the end of this amazing, awesome, phenomenal show. And I am so appreciative that y'all hung in here with your boy for the last 2 hours, 1 hour, talking about how we can lift our community up out of the mentality of internalized poverty. And I pray that we put into action the words that we have spoken today, that we move away from the ministry of shame and attend to the ministry of sharpening each other and holding us accountable as a community to doing better and making it better for our children's children, right? Good deal. Listen, don't forget, if you missed any part and you want to hear it, go to Apple Podcasts and you can catch it on the archive. It'll be up in just a minute. Listen, at the end of every phone call, my grandmama and my mama used to say, I love you a bushel, I love you a peck, and I love you a hug around the neck. Listen, this has been your boy, L. Spencer Smith, right here on Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK, The Truth with the Culture Call. Tune in tomorrow. There'll be another great show. I tell you, don't feel bad about it. We've got more to come, and it's going to be a great week this week. Y'all have a blessed and awesome day.